October the 30th of events that have taken place in Athabasca since the last war. The people taking part in the discussion are Alice Donahue, Nick Avaschuk, Tony Schenkinger, Bob Richards, and Frank Falconer. Okay, it's all up to you. How about giving us that story about how everybody came in here with...
Well, what you said just before this started, that there were four cars across the river.
Yeah.
Well, so possibly takeoff from there would be that there were four cars, but there were lots of horses. And there was a ferry and a cage. There was no bridge. The bridge was built, but what, 51,
52?
52. Although there were very few cars on Saturdays, the town would be filled with people because each district had a big truck, a three-ton truck, flat bottom, which served as a bus for 25 cents. They brought the people and their produce to town.
Oh, they charged for it, did they?
Yes. There was the tractors that come to mind is Curtis from Grossmont, Korolik from across the river from Deep Creek area, Cusick from Lincoln, Forfar. Yeah. There may have been others, I can't think of them offhand. Okay, next.
Well, what I remember particularly right after the war was the fact that all these young people came back from the service and started in businesses either with their fathers or on their own. And I'm thinking in terms of Dave Hunter, the Priest brothers, Stan Richards, Nick Avaschuk, of course,
Bob Schenkinger,
and myself. And we got involved immediately in all the organizations in town, namely the Legion,
Jack Mackey,
the Curling Club, yes, Jack Mackey's another one. And of course, Don Stevenson was here, and so on. We could name quite a few more. But we got involved in the organizations such as the Legion, the Curling Club, the Board of Trade,
Church,
and some of the churches, of course. And I guess we had the idea that we were going to change things around real quickly, you know, that everything, we had different ideas, I guess younger ideas than our parents had. And
well, the parents
I recall specifically the Chamber of Commerce. I know, I guess some of us felt that the ones that had been in the Board of Trade, I should have said, because it was Board of Trade in those days, and we immediately decided we were going to change the executive and get involved in this Board of Trade and improve the business community and so on. Well, things don't happen quite as quickly as we would have liked to, you know, we thought they would. But over the years, I guess it was probably successful, even though it was a gradual thing. I suppose we were probably called the Young Turks as such because of our new modern ideas that we thought we had.
Well,
Tony, we welcomed you. I mean, we were glad to see those young people come in and take over.
Oh, certainly. Oh, yes. No, there was no doubt.
And we thought your ideas, because I can remember the Board of Trade was, you know, that they were sort of not very active. Mm-hmm. And when you fellas came back, you had ideas and you had lots of vim and vigor.
Yeah, that
you brought
was
with you beautiful energy. Wives, and you came to town and established homes. So,
well, 1946 I regard as a rebirth to this town, because the town was in the doldrums from Lord knows when, maybe the early 30s, because of the Depression. Nothing new. There was, I remember the first fire we had. Carton tubes with the bit of hose, and that was our firefighting equipment.
And everybody ran to the fire.
And everybody fell over each other, and the fire kept burning madly. But we came not healed, but we came with new vigor, let's put it that way. Although we didn't have the money, we had ideas. And I remember the meeting when Bellamy, who was the president of the Board of Trade, so-called at the time, he chastise us for not starting to build a community center. And the way we went, collected grain and whatnot, and devious ways, what? Well, without any money at all, we got the community center started. We didn't have a kitty to draw on. The town didn't give us a grant. The county didn't give us a grant.
But the farmers...
The farmers donated the wheat.
So much wheat.
Or barley roads, whatever.
That's right. And they somehow they got a permission from the government, the elevators did, that they could...
Oh, good old Leaper took care of
that
somehow.
Accept
I don't know how.
Rain and turn it over. But so we had the basement ready.
Mm-hmm. That was in 49, and the basement was in use.
It opened on December the 31st, 49. Yeah. A New Year's Eve dance.
Well, I got 47, it went into use in 47.
It is.
Well, maybe it wasn't officially open.
So, in a couple of days.
Oh, the top part was officially open.
No, the top part came late.
Oh, no, it wasn't 47.
No, it wasn't opened in 47. There's an error there. It should be 49.
It wasn't even started because I came back here in 48 and it was built after I got back.
Mm-hmm. Another person that we're probably not giving enough credit to for a lot of the prosperity of the town was G.P. Fowler. Yes. There was a man that helped a lot of businesses get built up. He had something like 20 sawmills going, you know, which was a nice payroll for the country. Mm-hmm. And besides his end of it, you know, the winter work, there was lots of winter work. Mm-hmm. So your young people, probably why our young people stayed, because of people like G.G. Fowler, that he came in here in 1938, walked into this country to establish Athabasca River Lumber. Pushed lumber up the river against all odds, he had an awful production coming out at Collin Lake, 47, 46. I know in 48 he had 16 mills at Collin Lake alone.
You know, we haven't got very much information on that, Bob, and that's quite important. I think when I was here first, we used to sell a lot of stuff to sawmills. Mm-hmm. And I think at one time we had 33 sawmills on our books. Now, as you say, Fowler did an enormous amount, but then...
Imperial Lumber came
Imperial afterwards. Lumber,
yeah.
Hales Ross.
Whiteley?
Bissell's were here.
John Zarowski.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Bissell's were here
in 24,
till about
Ellison's, Stelter's.
47.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
and then they moved to Milda.
They're all.
But today, you know, there was the biggest promoter of this town was G.G. Fowler.
And he was a good promoter.
I know, like when Lanning Transport wanted to build, building the burnt, they didn't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he built a Fowler block for the teachers because they couldn't get any place to stay. There was no place for them to
Is
board.
Is that right?
Two of the girls lived down in the basement of the Fowler building.
Yeah, it was 50-51 when that was built. Yeah. The Temptrix came in 51, and that's where they lived.
And then he built those three houses on next to the bank there.
But that was after that.
Yeah, that was after that.
Yeah.
No, there's no doubt about it. G.G. Fowler was quite a booster for the town as well. I know he financed a house for me, the one that Baird Rogers had, mainly because Baird Rogers owed him quite a bit of money, and that was one way of getting his money out, so he financed it for me.
Yeah, well, the lumber and fur helped this economy in those days.
Well, you had your planer mills.
And you mentioned the clover and the...
Yeah. We had fishing, we had fur farming.
That's right, fishing, fur, and lumber.
So there were really a lot of things that contributed to the economy of Athabasca.
Fur was
good. Take McIntosh, there again, McIntosh contributed quite a bit to this area.
Mm-hmm. Commercial fishing at Collin Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Commercial fishing by the end of the war, you know, their heyday was probably the late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And and then that was pretty well closed down.
I thought he used to fly some fish out.
Yeah,
fly them into here and then ship them out by train.
Still, Joe, white fish is calling.
Joe Irwin flew his planes in all the time.
Whitefish tubey. Yeah. Got the worm.
Joe's still around, you know.
Oh, yeah. I shipped him quite often.
Yeah.
He's at Rochester.
Yeah.
And when Walter, the pilot that went down with that thing out there, that was after Joe had left. And that was pretty well the end of the fishing. As far as Calling Lake, you had mink ranchers there. Mm-hmm. And
just a minute, you're saying something I don't know about. A pilot that went down?
Joe Irwin flew McIntosh's plane, an old first Robin.
Yeah.
A fellow by the name of Walter Keelbaugh.
Mm-hmm.
Got killed in the Pelican Mountains with that. That was pretty well the end of the flying of fish out of the north.
Is that so?
That was after Joe.
After Joe had gone into services, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joe, of course, was married to McIntosh's daughter.
Yeah.
Well, then, see, about that time, the big machinery came in, the guys like Leishman. Mm-hmm. I remember.
Big land clearing outfit.
I remember old John.
And don't forget the government loans at 5% to the farmers.
Yes, that's true.
That built the farmers up.
I remember John Burtis.
More than anything.
Old John Burtis telling me that if a man cleared 1/4 section of land in his lifetime, that was pretty good.
It would be by hand.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
An axe and a horse. And then this big machinery came in. Leishman was probably the first, wasn't he?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. He came in, what, about 47? 46?
I guess later. I was here before him, and I was, and I got here in 46. I don't remember Leishman until, maybe 48. 47, 48.
Yeah.
Later. A year or two later than I was.
About that time.
There were other land clearing outfits came in too, weren't there?
Well,
no,
that's
the only one.
Not of that size. He had big equipment.
Yeah.
You remember, Bob, how long it would take him to brush out a quarter, and break it?
Oh, I can remember when he did Don McLeod's out there, and I would say that probably a week to some of us, you know, with breakdowns and that, he had.
Mm-hmm.
He had two or three big cats in there.
Mm-hmm. And then the machinery started getting available for farmers. It was a slow process, but it really, you know, I came back in 48, and of course we had the Massey Harris, and The big problem was we couldn't get enough tractors. They weren't turning them out fast enough. And returned soldiers had preference over anybody. And the man who was the farm machinery director for the Department of Veterans Affairs was Julius Crawford. Do you remember him?
Mm-hmm.
Julius,
mm-hmm.
One of the Crawfords at Calling Lake, and he started in Massey Harris with my father. And eventually he was pretty high up in Massey Harris, and they made him director of the Farm Machinery Division of the Department of Veterans Affairs. But it is kind of laughable. They sent us in one time, Massey Harris 22 tractor, which was very small. There weren't too many people who wanted a tractor that small. And I was unloading it from a boxcar. It was kind of wedged in. And it took me quite a while to unload this 22 tractor, but finally I got it out on the ramp.
What size were the tractors?
Oh, it would be two plow at the absolute most. Anyway, I got this thing wheeled out, and I was taking it over to the machinery lot, and a guy, Sam Sally, hollered across the street at me, and he said, "Frank, is that tractor sold?" And I said, "No," and he says, "I'll take it."
That was an easy sale, wasn't it?
No, there were lots of easy sales like that. People were crazy to get machinery.
Farmers market.
Cars were the same. I remember Andy Wood, 1951 already. Cars were still scarce. And then Charlie Fix got a shipment of cars, and Andy says, "Give me the key. If that car starts, I'll take it." Just like that. You see, it's, but the demand got met eventually.
Oh, yes. Yeah, my 54, 55 through. But they took a long time. There was a big demand built up.
Of course, that wasn't the only thing that was scarce in those times, and a lot of other commodities were scarce still for a few years after the war.
Refrigerators, for one.
Appliances, yes, but I'm thinking even in the clothing end of it, we had trouble getting
fleece lined underwear for
getting
one.
Goods for several years after the war still.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Towels.
Yeah, just
there's a whole bunch of junk.
Why would that be?
I wonder why.
Okay. 1948, pants like he's wearing were very much in vogue. We couldn't get them.
Mm-hmm.
Until there was a fire at McCaution, we'd get a phone call from GWG. "How many pair of pants, and khaki pants do you want?" Number 4007, I believe they were. We could have had all we wanted, and I believe your dad picked up all he wanted. All the dealers got all pants like they were water stained and whatnot. That's what you sold. No problem at all. My suspicion is that suppliers kept stuff back until the wartime prices and trade boards got knocked off. The minute I remember very well, we're selling shoes at $3.90, cost us about $3 a pair, more or less. And $3.95 was the sale price. Wartime prices and trade board kept a good eye on that. Immediately, the day after, the Mackenzie King canceled the wartime prices and trade board, you could get all the shoes you wanted, all the towels you wanted, all the underwear you wanted, at a dollar or two an item more.
Now, what year was that? That they were
about 48, I believe. 48, I believe. Wartime prices and trade board got knocked off.
Yeah, that is.
WPTV.
Yeah. Well, let's...
In the land of plenty, the minute price controls went on.
Let's finish up on...
Not much to do with the Tabasco.
Well, yeah, it does. Let's finish up on agriculture before we get away from the subject too far, because we haven't touched on the clover market.
I thought, it wasn't being taped before. Okay. So say what you said about the clover market before it started taping.
Paul Cavillac was one of the ones that...
I unloaded the first clover that ever came into this town. My father was the MLA, and there had never been any clover growing. And whether he initiated this or whether the provincial government did. But clover, of course, doesn't grow in too many areas. It's too well. And somebody asked him if he would bring in 5 or 10 sacks and get some of his friends to plant this clover and see what happened. And I was working around the store. That would be in the 30s when these 10 sacks of clover came in, and boy, it was heavy. And a bunch of farmers, he had arranged with a bunch of farmers. I imagine Paul Cavillac was one, because Paul was one of his best friends. Imagine Paul would be one of the first ones to start growing clover. And then it just, of course, what really happened was that after the war, the prices for clover boomed. And then the whole thing took off. And as you say, there was a tremendous influence from George Goodell at that time to encourage people to go into it.
Clover was raised, but merely just as to plow down. So I can remember as a kid, clover fields, you know, you couldn't see a horse in. And you cursed it because you had to try to plow that stuff under.
But then they put so much nitrogen into the soil.
Yeah, well, no fertilizer, this is what you did with it. But in those years that you're talking about, your alfalfa really came into the fore, and probably because the seed setting, your fields were smaller, your insects were more numerous, the bees and the like of that, and the set was something terrific. You know, you heard about somebody making a fortune on a 5-acre patch and this sort of stuff, especially along the river, you know.
And along the fence lines.
Yeah.
Wherever there was bush.
And maybe this is, you know, with the land clearing, maybe this defeated the clover market here. Because there is people made literally fortunes on alfalfa.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, clover was, red clover, not red clover, white clover was high as 56 cents a pound a year.
Yeah, 56 cents a pound. Well, and see,
well, nothing to get $300-$400 an acre for clover or alfalfa.
The market for this clover was the eastern United States, and apparently clover does not set seed there. There are only a few areas, and Athabasca was definitely one of the biggest areas.
Well, the Peace River
country. Some of the Peace River country.
There was an awful lot of clover.
Well, that petered out. Didn't quit.
I wonder why.
Well, like Bob named it, big fields now, no bush.
And you're spraying and the like of that. I mean, you kill off the weeds, you kill off the flowers, you kill off the, you clear the land, and it's a cycle that you probably
kill the prairie chickens, kill the partridge.
Speaking of bees. I can remember old Charlie Parker, that was his big deal, was to boost the honey business in this country. Of course, the two went hand in hand, alfalfa and honey.
That bee, the alfalfa was a leaf cutter bees, which did not produce honey. Nobody ever raised leaf cutter bees here.
Is that right?
No. But only one farm in Saskatchewan raises leaf cutter bees.
Well, then what did the what did these?
Well, these are the things that bred in old stumps, old trees, under the bark, and so on. And the alfalfa fields had to be small, and along the bush, as Bob said.
Mm-hmm.
Tame bees are good for rape. Now that we grow a lot of rape, there are honey farmers who are just in a clover too, the tame bees can do, but not the alfalfa.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have two or three good bee farmers in the area. I'm thinking of Sandra, Sam Rock and Bodner.
Bradley was one of them.
Bradley and Mastrick used to be a long time ago.
Yeah, Mastrick was after Bradley.
I think Bradley was the first.
Well, they were contemporary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Bradley operated in Mastrick.
Mastrick started right after the war, because I recall one time he had a little boiler that he used for heating his honey, and he didn't know how to get water in his boiler, so I put on an injector on it, which is a mechanical device that puts the water into his boiler. I remember, I think that was the last steam job that I ever did on my steam ticket that I had when I came back.
Well, Bradley,
you got a ticket when you were in the Navy?
Bradley was big in clover in the 30s.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was still operating.
He was a prize. He went one many prizes.
For about 10 years he was operating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Till mid-50s, maybe even 60. And then somebody took over from him, and he operated for 3-4 years.
Yes, I've often wondered what happened to Bradley.
They went out to
BC. Looks over the island.
And then all this beef business qualified our MLA to go to Rio de Janeiro to a beef conference.
No, Nick, you're being recorded. Okay.
God's truth.
Let's go on to some roads, hey. When I first came back here, I was kind of lost because the roads were so much better. I was used to dirt roads, and many times during the summer you'd get stuck. You have to go to the closest farmer and get hauled out with a team of horses.
There weren't a hell of a lot of gravel roads even in 46 or 47.
Yeah. When did the...
Clive's road until 51 when it opened.
When did the roads... Yeah, the highway to Edmonton was not gravel.
It was gravel, but it was still pretty...
I don't think the original was, Tony. Not the one I remember.
It
was gravel later, but...
It was gravel in... When I came here in 46, I don't think it was.
It was gravelled when I came.
Yeah, the U.S. Army.
But it was, was the old road.
And it was well maintained.
Down the valley.
Down in the valley. And then when they built the new road, then of course they did a better job of the gravelly.
Yeah.
But it was all sand down around Rochester. Yeah, that's right. They didn't have to do much.
A lot of it was sand.
Do you remember anything about that, Bob? When they started graveling in big wood?
Well, we're talking about it got worse because they started down near Morinville rebuilding.
That's right.
And those years there, that was the bad end. This end was good.
Mm-hmm. And then they did
but
this
it,
last.
But it was graveled in 46, I'm sure it was.
Yeah. Oh, it was graveled, yeah, but I can remember the Romeo LaBrie getting stuck on St. Albert Hill on the bus.
Oh, yeah, that's it. No, here, we didn't have, all we had was sand.
Yeah.
But it did take me 2 hours to go from Clyde to Athabasca. On a rainy day,
when the
1947.
When the roads got better in the country around here was when we got schools were bussed in, and everybody voted for their schools to close so they would get gravel roads.
Yeah, I'll bet that had a lot to do
with it. That's right.
Tell you one story, and that is that I went down the river with Axel Smith and Les Clark, and we holed around the backwoods and ended up at Slave Lake. And my father came up to Slave Lake, drove up to pick us up. And it took us 10 hours to go from Slave Lake to Athabasca. Because there were clay roads, and the tires would pick up the clay. And sooner or later, you would have a solid clay filling between your tire and your fender, and then you would have to
dig it out.
You'd have to dig it out, and you'd go a mile, and then you'd dig this out. And that would be about 1935, I think. And there was sure no gravel then.
No.
Even
well,
though
I can
made
tell you even much more recently, was after the war. I don't know if people ever heard of the Barrelots from the Island Lake.
Who?
Barrelots.
Yeah.
On the Narrows
out there, Island Lake. Well, apparently she had she came to the hospital. This is when Martin Aitchen was still secretary of the hospital. Came in to have this baby, and Barrelots were a German family, apparently from quite a. She particularly was brought up from a wealthy family, had lived in the city all her life, so they moved out to Hondu out on a homestead out there. This was a tremendous change for her, and she kind of went mental. While she was in the hospital, she had this baby boy. She had they had a lot of trouble with her. She was running away and all this kind of stuff. So Martin Hitchens went to George Hess, and he said, George, he said, we'd like to get this lady out of the hospital because we're having a lot of trouble with her. And the fact that Hess spoke German, they thought that she might be better off there. So they took her out to Hess's. And I guess the problem was still there because it's one day she took the baby and threw it in the straw pile. So George Hess came in to my dad and he says, Tony, he said, I'd like to drive, get this lady back home. So Dad says, okay, he said, Tony will take the car. And I was just learning to drive, I was maybe 16, 17. No, I was older than that. Anyway, so we started off, we loaded up this man and his wife and a baby, and we started off west, and we got as far as Mort's Hill. we made it partway up Morse Hill, and as far as we got, this little car, and couldn't, you know, it's muddy and wet and so on. We let them off there, and they must have walked. And, you know, today when I see that bear lot boy, the son, yeah. I don't know, he must be in his late 30s now, I guess. That was the baby boy that was with her at that time.
And where are the girls on? One was,
I don't know where they are now.
One was very clever.
Yes.
Very artist.
An accomplice or something, I forget about. What was latest? Anyway. About 1952, 53? The roads were bad. Yeah. From Popovich's, when Kravitz boy married a Popovich girl. It started raining at 9 o'clock, so we were going to get home. We didn't get home until 6 in the morning. As you say, yeah. Well, their gravel was only as far, perhaps, as Swanberg, little past Swanberg. If you remember where that was, just about 8 miles out of town, there was mm-hmm. gravel. And that, from then on, it was just clay and gumbo, and you name it.
I'll have to ask Val Breckenridge what he remembers about when that happened. Well, the other things, of course, that happened. Go ahead, you were going to say something?
Yeah, the one of the, I suppose, most important things that happened here as far as transportation to Athabasca was concerned, and that was that bypass that runs from Westlock North, Highway 44. And at the time when it was proposed by the government, we were on the Board of Trade. I remember Vince Priest was chairman of the Transportation Committee, and I was on it with him. We decided we'd put up a big sign down at the Clyde Corner advising people to take the scenic route. We have pictures of the sign. Mm-hmm. It was quite a big mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah, I was there. Remember. I was with you.
We built this sign and went and set it up down at the Clyde Corner, just past it on private property. But unfortunately, it didn't last very long. Somebody, we figure, must have knocked it down. But that bypass meant hurt Athabasca a lot.
Yes, it did.
And that was because there was a cabinet minister at Westlock, wasn't it?
Yes, right.
Jorgensen.
Yeah. I just think that was such a blow to Athabasca.
Political, no doubt about it. But at the time, too, prior to this, when we were studying this
travel miles.
And back
we made a trip. Vince and I, in the wintertime, took a trip from here, and we measured the highway. As far as we could go, and we could get up as far as Flatbush, and then we estimated from there on, but we measured it, and I think there's 14 miles difference on the speedometer that we're using for measuring, which is not all that accurate at times.
Well, I think Cliff and George Weldon did it. I thought they said 12, but I suppose they were moving. They sound good.
Well, sure. Speedometers can vary.
Yeah. Well, of course.
And they opened up new country. Like Flatbush and Jarvie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But then this was such an easy road to build with all the sand and gravel.
Of course, this
we
also,
had the road anyway.
The fact that road was there and was paved so much before ours
was
held up the construction and paving of Highway 2 from here to Smith.
Well, of course, the old Social Credit government had it was a Southern Alberta movement, right from day one. You know, it was a Bible Belt movement, and they were getting much better treatment than Northern Alberta was. Once they got everything paved down south, then they started coming north. But their voting strength was always, say, from Tasman south. Up north, we were mavericks every once in a while.
What about in the town itself now, as far as transportation or streets and sidewalks, this type of thing is concerned?
Well, that's been quite recently that we've gotten, you know, that there's been so much work done with the streets,
mm-hmm.
isn't it? You know, it was for a long time that our streets were not paved.
Oh, yes.
They were well maintained.
Well, I must remind you about Bon Ami.
Yeah, the grader. Well, they called it Bon Ami because it wouldn't scratch.
Oh.
But I was reading today about George Watt. We got an inquiry from the Genealogical Society about George Watt. And George was on the council, and he also dragged the roads. They didn't grade, they dragged, I think. Do you remember anything about that?
What do they do? They just pull a big heavy log around.
Something of that.
Well, it was something.
Was there
like
a blade?
That.
I think there was a blade.
No.
Talking about any? Oh yeah.
No, I mean, no. For dragging with horses. Pete Miller, I believe, did
may
the
have
dragon
had,
too.
May have had steel plates. Or something.
I think there was a.
I was dragging the roads. That was the expression.
After a rain or so on, they'd go on and smooth it out.
Smooth the ruts.
But there was a big hubbub on the council because George Watt was on the council, and he also graded the roads.
Up to his place.
Of course, you're going back before the period of time.
Yeah,
supposed
that's
to be
right.
About
that's
that,
right. Well, then, Dr. Meyer graveled the roads when he was mayor. And they weren't all that bad from that point on. And that would be in the 30s.
When I had town, on the, your dad was mayor. There was Sharp, there was Hall that I remember. I think Cliff.
Mills,
Fred Mills. And I remember when Bonamy was bought. It must have been 47, 48. But before then, I'm sure the roads were. Pete Miller had a team of horses, and he dragged, as you say, a log with a piece of iron on it to smooth out the rough parts. It seems to me. But we didn't have that many streets in those days either. I was in the. I'm on 53rd Street, I was in the outskirts of town.
Reservoir Hill, we called it in those days.
Yeah. Well, Reservoir, there was Mrs. Secord and nobody.
Yeah. Now Fred Mills built up there.
Yeah, Fred, and George LaBrie built next to him, Stan Richards and Bill Evans.
That was after the war.
And then all the rest was Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Secord was the only one. Oh yeah, Waldo Lewis dragged in some buildings from the farm and put them together.
That's right.
Just about that year. Noddings came a little later on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
But
and there was Pirate's Hill up at the back. And
oh,
you
all
kids
that
were all
was Bush.
There, I guess
the reason I chose it, because it was all Bush. Well, we kids used to play in the street. There was no traffic. Bill Evans made a sled. He started from the Reservoir Hill, and he coasted all the way to the river.
Yeah.
And bobsled.
Well, when I first came, they would, from where the second hospital was built, they would coast down that hill and right down here at the brick school. I suppose Tony, like, he was one of those.
And nobody
used
got
to
hurt.
Slide on there.
No,
hurt. They weren't run
and
over by cars
them.
Or anything of that nature.
So
there
weren't
that many.
When was the water system replaced? It was about 52 as well, wasn't it? 51, 52?
Well, the sewer went in 53 by my place.
Well, I'm thinking of all
over.
Did,
yeah,
water.
The main water
just
system.
Just about a year or two before
that was
the water.
47 that they redid the water system downtown.
No, I think it was after that. I could be wrong. No, I wouldn't bet on it.
I'm trying to tie it into something.
I remember the mess we had on Main Street. You remember we had it all dug up and it rained and rained and rained. And we had one heck of a mess. There.
You're not confusing with the pavement.
No.
That was worse than the water.
Well,
I'm trying to tie it down. Just a minute. When did it? We were already in this.
Was that after the flood? When it flooded down there?
No, way before. If you're talking about the flood was about 53, 54, 55, somewhere there.
Well, there was one bad one in 43.
Oh, yeah.
Well, then
I
don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that damaged the water plant. Water plant was down here.
43?
Mm-hmm.
Before then.
For 44? 43 or 44?
Well, I wasn't here then, and I remember the one where we sandbagged the water plant.
No,
that was
50. That was 55 when we sandbagged.
Oh, yeah, the water plant. The power plant, right.
The power plant.
But,
sandbagged.
Power plant, that's on the.
That was 55.
But there was one before that.
Well,
there
could have been.
In 44. Because it flooded the whole valley down there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that brings up something else. When that flood came along, what you say was 53 or 54, an awful lot of the country had become electrified. The electric power went in right after the war. Not not too long after the war.
Quite a bit after. Well, okay, maybe here, there, maybe, but not general. Christy was in general, Bob. When did you folks get power? Can you remember?
Across the river was later.
Yeah,
Wasn't there a vote in 48 on
rural electrification?
Socialization.
The vote was that you would tie it in with the provincial election, mm-hmm. whether the province shall buy, shall own the electric power.
Yeah.
And we lost because Edmonton, who had their own power, they didn't want to sell it to the province. So it swung the balance for private ownership. But that had nothing to do with rural electrification.
No, that's about the time that your rural electrification was coming.
Yeah, maybe that was the start of it, yeah. I don't know. And there's the rural telephone, too, that, you know, they hooked onto the fence lines.
Really went in earlier than that.
Well, they weren't as plentiful. There were only a few. Your dad had
that one. Was Alberta government telephones.
Mm-hmm.
That was the original.
Yeah, but the farmers
had their own.
Yeah, I know.
Telephone, yeah. There was
along the fence lines, they went.
Little mm-hmm. companies.
Yeah, along the fence lines.
Yeah, they
lines,
had a lot of, well, that was done in the 30s.
Yeah.
But large-scale telephone.
Oh, that was a lot later 60s. Than that. That was getting on into the late 50s and 60s. When they went to the rural,
when everybody had telephone, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they absorbed all these little telephone companies. Mm-hmm.
Well, even power was about the 60s.
That's right.
Because with the coming of power came the septic tanks, became mm-hmm. waterworks in the house. I'm looking at those echoes. I'd like to get my hands into them. I'm sure it's being mentioned. Here and there?
No, I don't think it was.
It'll be there somewhere.
When they got
notices about ads, perhaps, about electrification meetings? I don't know.
There should be some.
Did they make a summary of this period of time yet from the papers? Or
no,
they
I
did
see
with some of the other periods, you know? I was looking through one book. They do, because I saw it.
I had a bunch of echoes.
No, I think you're wrong about that, because...
I don't know. I'm guessing from the top of my head.
See, one person who was very active in electrification was Red Nizel. He had a post hole
mm-hmm.
digger.
Mm-hmm.
And
telephone, too.
My neighbor out at Batiste Lake, Len Fisher,
Credit Union formed in 45 here.
A lot of wiring.
What's that?
Credit Union organized in 45 here.
Population of town, somebody asked. 1945, 717.
717, right.
I thought it was 750.
Hooker and Cope bulldozing road to Wabasca. Petition for RCMP patrol in 45 already.
See, quite a few farmers had their own power plants, you know, either by wind or they tried by wind, but they had a little more.
A few of them did.
There were very few. It's when the power went through, it's when farmers got it. Are you looking at 55, Nick?
Oh, no, don't. It's too big a job.
No,
okay.
That's an all-day job.
I'm guessing that power, that Calgary power went into the country about 60, 65 and that time.
Northland.
Okay.
First was Dominion.
Did Northland go at all?
Yeah.
Did Northland go out in the country at all?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. But they were rural.
Yeah, but not very far, I don't think.
No. They were all REAs. But Northland
Hingley,
was...
The Hingley murder in 45, eh?
45, 46?
Yeah, no, 45.
And this?
October?
Yeah.
45, that...
Mm-hmm.
I know what happened before I came back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were talking about it when I came back. In February. When I came back.
No, Alice. When did they close all the rural schools and start busing people into town?
Well, the first one was bused. Look this way.
First natural gas hookup at the pool hall in 1946.
That's when we got gas. We all had gas.
Population had increased from 46 to 749, 870 October 47. Oh, I'm sorry, 47.
Yeah, I'd say 47.
Yeah, that's
46, 47, I was firing.
The first bus driver was Thompson, was it?
Fire Brigade
Baptist
form.
Yeah. Who was the old miller? Hmm? Remember the old miller that was down, lived down, had a mill here? You know, made
flour? Breitkreutz.
What's his name?
Well, no, there was one before Breitkreutz.
Are you talking about a flour mill?
Flour.
Breitkreutz was one of them.
Well, he was the first bus driver. And that was for West Athabasca. And I think they came in here in 1944. That's when they started, when there was a shortage of teachers.
School population of 47 of 400, nearly 400, it says.
Yeah, because we were being bused in by that time.
Bus depot was decided to build a bus depot in 47.
And there was a good bus depot.
Mm-hmm.
Never rebuilt. Mayor Faulkner, okay, let's see, how close was I?
Fred Mills, Sharp, Shaw.
A shot.
Yeah, I'm very interested in when electricity came in. I can find out. In fact, if I phone Burl Zell right now, I bet she would know.
What for?
Well, it's getting pretty late.
No.
No, there's a fair amount of sickness in that family. I think
I think she'd mind.
You just want to get me.
This just goes to 49. Maybe you'd have to check somebody later. I don't think they have anything past 40. Provincial Amateur Boxing Championships in 49.
Yeah.
Oh, finally.
We had.
Oh, that was the other thing that I was trying to find out. The Dominion Amateur Wrestling Championship.
Looking 47. I'm guessing
I've
that
was
47.
I've got some of the programs.
Pardon?
I've got a program.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So with you?
I've not with me, no. But I've got the program. But well, you must remember that.
We worked on it. Eh?
Give me a...
I'm sure.
In the old skating ring.
For the
I'd like to get a copy of that program.
Rural electrification push.
I loaned so much of my stuff. I loaned a bunch of stuff to Marvin Rogers, so I hope I got it back.
Mm.
And then we also held the, that was the wrestling, but we also had the other.
The boxing, Provincial
amateur,
boxing.
No, we had amateur
run.
Racing and jumping.
Yeah. Field. Track and field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Well,
I've got both those programs.
And have you got the one on boxing? We had
mm-hmm.
the provincial
wrestling.
No, wrestling. We had Dominion. We had provincial boxing, and we had provincial track and field.
I don't remember boxing.
Mm-hmm.
Where was I when the boxing was going on?
Probably.
We had to serve them a bean supper. I remember at the curling.
Well, that was at Cardston. That one back there.
No, but you had it over here. You said provincial boxing.
Mm.
But that was at Cardston.
At Cardston. Oh,
yeah,
that was it.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, I
said it here. No, it said it.
Well, then we didn't have
well,
it.
Well, how big was
I
that? Was that just in one direction, or was that all over the district?
Our first graduation was held in 1947
yeah.
in the Immigration Hall.
Track and field, I remember Helen Zellman winning by two or three lengths, and that's where it ended. She didn't go beyond here. She didn't go to Olympics or anything.
And how about Easttown? Did he work on those two?
National pre-Olympic
47, there it is.
Pre-Olympic wrestling
championships.
Yeah, that's
the one.
47, eh?
Mm-hmm. Well, but it was held in May or June.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
Yeah, that was the announcement.
Good, thanks. Say thanks to Randy.
Huh? But it was called the Dominion.
Well, since 1955 has been the big deal
what
started.
It was called.
No, we had people from Vancouver and people from Montreal.
Was rural
it was Dominion.
Dominion. That was the beginning of it, because it would take a couple of years at least.
Oh, yeah. It started probably.
Well, the guys who won here, the guys who won here.
Was secretary. West of the
yeah,
West.
That's how we got these things.
That's how we got both of them. Right.
But the guys who won here, they went to the Olympics.
So we've covered school busing and we've covered telephone.
Oh, yeah. What REA when?
55.
55.
Yeah. The county, we have the date for the formation of the county.
Oh, that was what, 58, 57? What's the date? Frank? What's the date formation of the county?
Oh, here. Athabasca joined the school division in January 24th, 1945.
Yeah, that wasn't the county, though.
No.
That wasn't when they went into the county.
The county was... That was that when I left the county,
but I mean, that was when we left the town school.
Yeah, well, town joined the division. And there was the division and there were the RMs.
So you wonder when the division became a county?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, the division included a lot bigger area.
Yes, right.
Black Labiche, clear up to
Fort McMurray.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
Right.
You had
and up to Smith.
90 some odd schools, wasn't it?
I think it even went to...
No, come on, Bob.
Yes, it did.
No,
it went as far as Grassland.
No.
90 schools, I was on it when we had 90 schools.
Yeah,
your dad retired and... No, I was on with your dad yet.
Eric Hawson,
yeah, you were the
superintendent.
Town representative.
Yeah, I know. But our jurisdiction ended past Boyle, Grassland. Smith was part.
Yeah.
The 90 schools isn't so much.
No, Bill.
We didn't have Lac La Biche, no.
Yes,
Bill Plamondon, yes.
Sure,
represented
we had
Lac La Biche.
Well, maybe in 45, but not that.
Yeah, well, I mean in 45.
Yeah.
And he had
see, we had Loy, we had six trustees. I could actually name them.
And Eric used to fly into Fort McMurray.
No, I was on. I was on with Vic Walanyuk.
Uh-huh.
Vic Walanyuk took your dad's
place. Yeah. And when Dad was on there,
who used to fly?
Eric Hawson would fly into Fort McMurray to inspect the schools.
Because it was part of the division, or was it because
it was part of
because it's part of his job?
Large area inspectorate.
But Lac La Biche was in this at one time. Lac La Biche, Hilo. All of that was sure.
And Mr. Broughton, Larry Broughton, was the first superintendent to take over.
When did they separate?
Just prior to the town coming into it, I think.
That's right. I think just about
that. You see, we just sold. I'm talking about the school. We just sold a lot to
him.
Near Lac La
Biche. I think he was our CEO.
We didn't know him.
Oh, I know he was. But yeah.
Turned up as being an art. And that was a survival of that old. Of that old school.
Oh, that I don't know. I don't think.
So Wandering River, all of that was.
I don't know.
Okay, now, what? Well, let's not wander too far.
We're not still on that tape, right?
Oh, yes, you are. Yes, you're getting out of control. Let's talk about the oil boom, because that was a big deal. And that must have been right 40, in the early 50s, eh?
No,
48, 49.
48, I would think.
48.
Yeah, I'd say 48. The seismic crews were here in 48.
They sure were. Yeah. Because my brother was working for Western Geophysical.
I know when
Western Geophysical
we started working in the bush and General Petroleum drilled right in the same timber in 48.
Well, when was it that influx of people came in here with the oil? Because we had they only stayed about 2 weeks.
Western Geophysical? Came in and they were here in 48.
Well, I remember our school population really soared. We didn't know what we were going to do with these kids.
Kurt
and then
worked with them when he was about 18 years of age.
And he was there then.
And he was 29.
Yeah, I remember this. I remember 48. Yeah. I can tell you why.
1948 was oil.
Carl Kane was party chief there when they first came in.
He's the one that married Lottie Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's where I heard that name.
Remember Lottie Bryant? Mrs. Bryant?
And there were a lot of geophysical crews in all.
Well, that's
how long
a start,
did that, how long did that last? That was a big economic boost to the district.
Well, it kept going on and off continuously.
For about 10 years.
Even yet, it's going.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, but on
not
a
that, that lasted that for about, oh, probably six in this area, you know, of the geophysical, and then there was always drilling.
And then there was a lull of
geophysical,
and then they started
too.
Up again.
Yeah, well, Patty Jordan was a driller. Mm-hmm. He was a tool push.
Mm-hmm. He was with Lottie's husband, she said.
Western.
Well, it kept on and off. I'd say the peak was only a few years ago, maybe 10. That was the peak when we had all the pipeline activity and all the drilling west of Baptiste Lake. That was intensive drilling. That was about 10 years
ago. Well, there was another financial boost to the... And then, of course, the other thing, too, that we've got to mention is the installation of gas to all the farms. That was a big thing.
That's quite recently.
That's very recent.
Very recent.
Of course, the schools help. If you're talking about boost, the schools, the hospital, the old folks' homes, both of them, the health unit.
Yeah.
Those are all boosts.
Yeah, we became a center for not only education, but also for
health
care.
Yeah.
With the nursing home now.
Yeah, it was the center, wasn't it? And everything.
Unit, I'm surprised how many cars.
It also became a center for retirement. You know, we have a lot of people that came in off the farms that... bought little houses in town and retired here.
Boiled up the nails.
Unfortunately, most of them are widows now, but
they're retired.
This happens, I guess.
Can't believe
we have a very high population, senior citizen population, over 65 population, of course, because of this. Because of the
seniors. Did you say
65%?
No,
I didn't. Oh.
Over
65.
Was it too safe to say the principal industry is old age pensions? Athabasca?
Well, you know, when I took the census back in 81, it was just amazing the number of residences in this town where one person lives.
That's right.
A house, one house, one person.
Yep.
That's why the population isn't anymore. It looks like it should be more.
Well, it started to go up again.
Shrank, isn't it? That's about... Six?
It did shrink
it's
for
up
a few
again.
Years.
Well,
but it started
we're
back
not
up.
2000 yet.
It only shrunk there 1 year, really, 2 years ago. It went down.
But in those days, people lived in basements, two or three to a house, mm-hmm. two or three families to a house.
Families were larger.
Well, yes, about four children was a standard family.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of basement living.
And I was just reading today, mm-hmm. that 1.4 children is the
That's
average right. Canadian family now.
How do you get 1.4?
I don't know where they get that 0.4.
That is Barbara Meal, and I don't very often write her.
Halfway.
Something we haven't mentioned here is fire prevention. Hey,
protection?
We have a good
protection.
Fire
protection.
Brigade.
We sure have a good fire brigade.
We really have.
We saved a lot of lots.
Yeah.
Burned a lot of buildings, but saved a lot of land.
Well, you know, I had a fire
about
10 years ago, I guess. Mm-hmm. So help me, if that fire had been in Edmonton, that house would have gone, but it wasn't in Edmonton, it was in Athabasca.
That's what
that
I said.
The fire department was there in about 2 or 3 minutes.
I timed them when I was working in the store. About a minute and a half, and a minute and a half, two at the most, when the truck rolls out.
Yes, we've had very good service from our volunteer fire department.
You had one there, you had in a store once, a fire, too, didn't you?
Yeah, we had one down
just
there.
About 49 when I first came back.
Yeah,
in the
that was a tough one.
That
got into the ceiling.
Shavings insulation. Incidentally, that's another topic. What we're really working on right now is quality of life. And that's what we're going to end up with. The difference in the quality of life before the war,
and today. And it's almost unbelievable. No, I'm one
well, when you think back on it, I know I built a little house just over here and we didn't have running water. You know, Bob Garten was hauling our water.
Mm-hmm.
And we had our own septic system. And then we finally did get water and no sewer for some years.
Mm-hmm.
That's so right.
Raising kids, you know, having small children, it was quite a struggle.
As soon as I got old enough, I spent an hour a day splitting wood, hauling it in, hauling ashes out. One of the biggest changes in the quality of life, as far as the town was concerned, was gas.
I would agree.
Oh, yeah.
Then, of course, the thing that really changed the country around was electricity. It even changed their eating habits, you know. I boarded them farms, and my God, the eating was very poor. Salt pork, and of course it wasn't the best place, but...
Of course, with electricity then came refrigeration. Which made a big difference in your eating habits.
Yeah.
Well, plumbing was impossible without electricity.
That's right.
That's right.
You need a pump.
They had lots of food, and it was good, but it was the kind that you... I mean, you couldn't keep stuff. Like meat and things, had either canned or salted.
Put your butter down the well.
Yeah.
Well, for the last 10, 15 years, my favorite expression was, we have the amenities of the city and the comforts of a small town.
That's true.
Can't express it any better.
And nobody ever wants to leave Athabasca once they come.
Well, besides
you'd be surprised how many young people are here because they like the comforts of a small town and they do get the amenities of the city. I'm thinking of your boy, my boy, Metonic boys. Quite a few young people have come back to stay. I understand Steve Berzin's daughter is around.
Mm-hmm.
She came back from the city.
And we made the university people, or at least we hope we've introduced Athabasca to them favorably so that it's okay.
Of course, the other thing, too, that has improved considerably is both recreation and cultural activities. You know, we had, say, right after the war.
Yeah. Keep going on that, eh?
We had, when Richard Hall built his theater, of course, we had movies, eh? Prior to that, mm-hmm. we had Parker's Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the theater did burn and was replaced, but... television came in 59. I think we finally got a cable. That was when we got our cable system, I believe, mm-hmm. in 1959.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget the curling rink and the skating rink.
There was a new skating rink built down on the lower flat area, and then in 66 the new one was built up on the south hill with refrigeration.
And the swimming pool.
And the arena. The arena was built in 71. Wasn't it, Bob?
Yeah, I was just thinking that quick. When was it?
71.
Fall of 71.
October 71, Bob.
Yeah.
And since then, of course, the swimming pool and the cultural center.
And it's surprising the activities in these.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get the young correspondent over here saying that the Basque has nothing to offer. Kind of frustrating to us old timers.
Who says there's nothing to offer?
In the a young correspondent.
Oh, in the Echo.
Oh, Griner. Peter.
I phoned Bob McGregor today to tell him to either shut that guy up or we wouldn't let him use the archive, but I didn't get Bob, but I'll get him.
We were talking about that, too. Edith and I were talking about that.
Yeah, well, Edith went after me, and...
Mm-hmm. He's talking about this 75 years ago, 50 mm-hmm. years mm-hmm. ago, 25 yeah. years ago thing.
No, his old attitude.
It isn't worth reading anymore.
Actually, if that could be a very interesting column, if he would put somebody who appreciated the district, you know, doing that. But the way that, you know, he doesn't appreciate those old-timers, he doesn't appreciate the development, he doesn't appreciate anything.
Yeah, he's treating it as a big joke.
years and this
Oh, his writing is atrocious.
And then, you know, there's times you...
Where's he come from?
I don't know.
You'd want him to go into some...
From down east Grant McEwen College, I believe.
Anyway, it's going to stop.
Is that where he's a graduate?
That's...
That could be a very interesting column.
Well,
if
it used to be.
To
it was before, you know.
Yeah.
But particularly if they stick to local news, you know, who cares if something's happening in Europe at a particular time?
Incidentally, you know, the building of the Alaska Highway was quite an economic boost to this town, too. There were people who got big jobs here that, you know, they had just been through the Depression.
And even the subsequent, you know, after the Alaska Highway was built, the subsequent shipments that went through here, you know.
Yeah.
Hundreds of trucks with war goods up to Alaska went through Athabasca. Oh,
until about 48, 49, they're rolling through here.
Well, of course, no.
That was the only route.
It was till about, well, till the war ended in 45.
Yeah, but I mean, even after the war, for 3-4 years, we had trucks going through, we had tourists going through. And I remember selling parkas in July because they're going to Alaska.
Slim Nelson went to work for him for $1,000 a month. I remember him telling him.
Families were here, they lived here, and they'd come back and buy a whole bunch of clothes before they have to go back onto the rigs again.
White tires,
but they were getting
cars.
That developed a lot.
Yeah.
That developed a lot of farms.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. I think we've covered most of what I'm interested in.
Good. I can go
there is one thing.
A lot of information in here, but this only goes to 49.
Well, there's more there. There's another one from 50 on.
Where
was it? The thing that I'm interested in.
And 15 years later, and they built, mm-hmm. and they went that far. They got old. Then 1946 came the veterans. That was a rebirth of the town, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to a large extent, our kids are taking over. Look at the golf course. Look at the beautiful job they're doing on the golf course. In the last 5 or 6 years.
Of course, there's more money.
Exactly. They had the opportunity. The generation that preceded 1946 were hampered by the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that they lacked ideas. I mean, people 5,000 years ago had ideas. There were Julius Caesars and Alexanders and
most of the young people that came back had been away for a while. You know, whether it's a year, 2 years, 5 years, or whatever.
You mean the veterans?
And then they came. No, I'm talking about our sons.
Yeah, okay.
And then they came back, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea was, you know, when they finished school, they didn't want to stay here. They wanted to go elsewhere, Dave,
yeah.
Just like we were.
Right.
So then all of a sudden they decide, well, Athabasca's not that bad, and we'll go back.
Maybe the lesson is you have to be away to appreciate it.
That's right.
Well,
you were
away from Canada for 2-3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Canada never looked so good as when you were away from it. And you wanted to get back real fast.
Well, I can imagine during wartime.
So, but it goes on forever. Each era regenerates itself.
And there's always a cause. One thing, for instance, that good roads have brought is the distinction between farming, and farmers and town people has disappeared. It used to be that there were two classes of people, the ones who lived in the town and the ones who lived in the country, and basically the people in the country did not like the town people because they thought they had everything soft. And suddenly...
Probably some of that resentment even now,
Very small degree. Right now, you know, if you... Probably the president of your golf club is a farmer. Or the president of the curling club. They're just as much a part of the town today. The boundaries have vanished.
Well, I think your busing of kids has done a lot. Your people are mixing it.
Well, your recreational facilities something is the biggest mixer, actually.
Yeah. Because of the busing of kids,
more than half
there's a good mix
people
match.
Use
more than half the people that use our recreation facilities are from out of town.
Yeah. Well, because of the roads, you see, but it all ties in.
A typical example of what you're saying, though, Frank, has been in the town relations with the county council. We're having the best relations now with the county council that they ever have, but I can go back several years ago, and there was always that resentment between the two councils. The county council seemed to think that Athabasca was getting more than their share as a result, and they were always sort of bucking the...
Do you want to go back to 1950? Division and town, what kind of monster there was?
No, this...
Oh, man.
Well, of course,
we're fortunate in that we can get very good cooperation from the county.
Practically all your county councillors now have been educated in the present system.
Yeah.
But the key, as Bob pointed out, is roads. I mean, live arts would not be possible without roads. Swimming pool would not be possible without roads.
They come in traveling 15 miles.
15? Well, they come from Grassland to learn to swim over here. That's about 30 miles. And it takes them half an hour to get in.
Some from Lac La Vache.
See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We bring the kids in
because,
from Smith.
Because of the roads, we
yeah, that's right. So
we're swimming,
we can go ahead and build these things. No, and one thing led to another. That is some of it by design, some of it by accident. But the younger generation is taking advantage of it.
What do you think of the progress on the history book, Frank? Are you satisfied with what's happening?
I'm not really in on the inner workings.
You're
I've done quite a little. I've done some writing.
Mm-hmm.
But then, Frank, I don't know how they can use another 60 pages.